In all three stories, I see indication that God suffers when the things that He values are lost. And I see a tremendous hint in the homecoming of that prodigal to his dad of the incarnation that God's not going to stay still. That God is going to get up and move to go out and reclaim His lost children, even at great cost to Himself. The Bible says that while that boy was still a long way off, the father saw him and he was filled with compassion for him, and he got up and he ran to his son. He threw his arms around him. He kissed him. See, that's not shocking to you, but that's a shocking story to the people who heard it. It's shocking because, you see, in that culture, in that day, once you got over 30, you didn't show your legs in public. That was not dignified. That was not proper. The only way that old man could have run was to hike that old robe up over those knees and take off down that robe so he doesn't trip. And people say, would you look what that old fool is doing? Why is he moving so fast, by the way? Only time in the Bible God is in a hurry. The only time in the Bible God gets in a hurry is when He's running to meet a sinner coming home. He runs down there. He doesn't care about protocol. He takes the indignity of that boy and He puts it on Himself. He covers up His shame. I see in Luke 15 a commentary on John 3:16 that God so loved His lost world that He ran to it in the person of Jesus Christ so that they could be saved. I see the terrible sprint from heaven to Calvary. In fact, let me give you another version of the story, if you'll permit. There was a father and he had two sons. The oldest was named Joshua. The youngest was named Adam. Now, Joshua was a good boy. Joshua always kept the will of his daddy. Now, Adam was a different matter. Adam had a rebellious streak. And one day Adam walked out, slammed the door, and said, I ain't never coming back to this farm, and took off down the road. Now, the father still had Joshua. And Joshua did the father's will, and Joshua was a joy. But the father missed Adam. There was a twinkle in the father's eye that was gone. More than once, Joshua would wake up in the middle of the night and hear his father in his sleep crying out, Adam, Adam, where are you? And Joshua knew that the heartache of his dad would never be fixed until Adam could be home. So Joshua started to hang out at the marketplace, listening to the grapevine, to get news about where Adam might be. One night at supper, he said, Dad, I think I know where Adam is. But it's not good, Dad. He's far from home. He's with the pig farmer. He's in another country, Dad, and he's sick. And Dad, I don't think he'll ever be able to make it home by himself. You'll never see him again unless you let me go for him. And because the father loved Adam so much, he sent Joshua to the far country. And Joshua left, and Joshua found Adam in the back of some barn, sick and feverish, lying on a mat of straw. He picked up his head, cradled in his lap, and Adam opened his eyes. Joshua, what are you doing here? I've come to take you home, Adam. Dad misses you. Oh, Adam, Joshua, I could never get home. I'm too sick. You can get home if I bring you home in my power. About that time, the door to the barn opens and the pig farmer walks in. Put the man down. He's in my debt and I own him now. He's not yours anymore. Joshua stood up big and strong, looked the pig farmer in the eye. He says, I don't care how dirty or smelly I have to get in this country. I have come to pay his debt and I will not leave until it's paid. And Joshua got into the filth and the muck of the far country. And he paid Adam's debt. Then he went back to the barn and he made a yoke in the shape of a cross and he put it on his back. And he put Adam on it. And he took off for home. And one day just before the sun went down, the father looked and there he saw. He saw Joshua carrying a cross and bringing Adam home. And he ran down to the gate and he threw his arms around him and he covered him with hugs and he covered him with kisses. And he said, there has never been a party thrown like the party I throw tonight. And the fact is, folks, the Pharisees never believed God was like that, or they wouldn't have asked the question. Do you know what the point of the three stories of Luke 15 is? I'll give it to you in four words. People matter to God. People matter to God. All people. Every single one. And what does that mean for a church that wants to base its values on the things that matter to God? If we want to be people that value the things that God values, what does it mean for us? I don't know if it's a true story or not, but they say that when David Livingstone died, he was brought back to England and buried in a church where England buried her greatest citizens. And the natives in Africa to whom he had ministered thought that was inappropriate. And so according to the story, they stole passage on a ship. They snuck across the channel. They snuck into the cathedral. They exhumed his body. They took the heart out of the corpse. They went back to Africa and they buried it under a tree like Livingstone used to preach the gospel under. Because, you see, they said, a man's heart ought to be where his life was. And my question for you this morning as we close is this. If we were going to bury your heart today, bury it where your life was, where would we bury it? At the office? At the park? Would we bury it among any sinners? Would we put it where Jesus would be? Does your life reflect what matters to God?